You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now let's get on with today's show. Music therapy is a highly accessible medium for active, goal-oriented engagement in a fun and empowering way. Music therapy activities led by a board-certified music therapist provide children with opportunities to practice non-music-related skills in all developmental areas, including cognitive, motor, communication and language, social, behavioral, psychosocial, and emotional areas, regardless of musical skill or experience. Research-based music interventions are designed and implemented by music therapists to target individualized goals while simultaneously providing opportunities to practice leadership skills, foster independence, improve relationships, and allowing for freedom of expression in individual and group settings. Music is relatable in some way to all people regardless of age or ability and is a part of every culture. Therefore, engaging in music therapy through singing, moving, listening, and or playing instruments as an accessible and adaptable medium through which girls can become empowered. My guest today is Eric Ervast. He's a board-certified music therapist and received his bachelor's and master's degree in music therapy from Florida State University. He completed his internship at University of Kentucky Healthcare and has a background in primary medical and pediatric music therapy with a variety of additional clinical experience. Prior to joining the Tampa Bay Institute for Music Therapy in May of 2017, he provided music therapy services to patients at Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare and to individuals and groups in the Tallahassee community. Eric has a passion for working with infants and children in a variety of settings and is an active member of the American Music Therapy Association. Well, welcome, Eric. It's so great to have you here today, and I'm really excited for two reasons. One, you are the first male that I have interviewed for Raising a Powerful Girl so far, which is exciting. And two, we're going to talk about music therapy, which is so incredible. So can we start with you just telling me a little bit about how you got into music therapy and what that is?
Yeah, sure. So I first heard of music therapy when I was entering college for my undergraduate program at Florida State University. For me, I knew that I wanted to do music, but I did not know exactly what in music I wanted to pursue. And so during my freshman orientation, I was speaking with one of the advisors, and they had told me, I had told them I was interested in, you know, psychology and helping people and different things. And they said, we have two good programs for that. One of them is music education and the other is music therapy. And they said, if you're going to go into music education, your heart really has to be in it now. And it wasn't. So I said, let's give music therapy a try. And it turned out to be my career. So I lucked out kind of in that way. But
yeah. That's pretty cool. You know, you took a passion of music and a love of music and found a career that's fulfilling to you, which is so important. So tell me about what do you do as a music therapist?
Yeah, sure. So as a music therapist, the basis of what I do is I use music to reach non-musical goals. And so what that means is that I will go into a session with somebody, it could be anybody of any age, any ability, and I will assess what their individual needs are as well as their individual abilities and their strengths. And I will create research-based music interventions to reach non-musical goals relating to cognitive, behavioral, emotional, communicative, any area of human development, I can create music interventions designed to target those goals and those skills.
Awesome. And I know you did some work in a NICU. So what does that entail? How are you using music therapy with these teeny tiny babies?
Yeah. So in the neonatal ICU, we have infants born premature. We have infants who are born not early, who may be addicted to heroin and different things because their moms have used. And we use music really to, bottom line, to enhance neurological skills. Many premature infants do not have the suck, swallow, breathe reflex necessary to eat. And there is a device that exists that was created by a music therapy professor called the pacifier activated lullaby. And this is a device that uses music as a reinforcer. There's an audio source connected to the pacifier. And when the infant sucks on it properly, it plays 10 seconds of music. If the infant sucks on it again, within that 10 seconds, the music continues. And if the baby does not, then the music stops until the baby sucks again. And using music as a reinforcer in this way, infants learn how to develop that suck, swallow, breathe reflex that they can then transfer to feeding with their mom. We also use what's called a multimodal stimulation, which is using a music and massage-based intervention to enhance the infant's tolerance to environmental stimulation. And so what that entails is first beginning with just humming, then elevating that to sing softly, and then adding in massage. Of course, observing for any signs of overstimulation in order to gradually get the infant more accustomed to environmental stimulation in that way. And then none of that is even getting into what we can do to help mom and how mom relates to her infant, both in the NICU and out of it as well.
Awesome. That's really amazing. So many aspects that I didn't know it was used for, especially with that suck swallow. And then it makes sense, you know, where these premature babies are in this, you know, enclosed environment, or it's a very different environment when they're in the womb and then coming out premature. The overstimulation and having to learn how to be able to deal with stimulation is a really big thing for them. So it's amazing how you're using music to kind of help them get grounded in this new world that they're in. That's awesome. So tell me about, have you worked with, say, the toddler age group, which can be a very interesting age group because that's when you start to see some behavioral issues, many which are normal and some that might not be neurotypical. How is music therapy beneficial for children that are neurotypical and not neurotypical?
Sure. So one of the great things about music therapy is that because it is accessible to everybody regardless of age or ability, we're often able to have children in the same group with neurologically functioning individuals. And music interventions are adaptable as well. So say in the same group, I have a kiddo with autism and a kiddo who does not have it. I can, depending on the ages, of course, I can use my music intervention to match where each of them are. So if my, say they are 6 and 7, that kind of age, I can have the fully functioning child, you know, play a steady beat on a drum, you know, given they have that rhythmic skill as well. And I can use that intervention to then allow that child to be a model for their peer who has autism. And that accomplishes so many things regarding group cohesion and, you know, practicing leadership skills for the typically functioning child, as well as for the child with autism to have that peer level mentor and that peer level model to look up to.
That's awesome. And it's great for them to be able to have that inclusive environment, which is so beneficial for both children, to learn to, you know, be able to mix and work together and cohabitate, even though there are differences. So that's a really beautiful thing. How about teenagers? Getting into the teenage years, I'm sure you remember those. And being that you were so musically inclined, how is music therapy beneficial for teens these days? I mean, so many of them you see constantly have their earbuds in, they're on their iPhones, they're listening to music. Is that a good thing? Is it not a good thing? How can it be used as something that's positive?
Yeah, sure. So I will begin with, I have much less experience with teenagers than I do with kids. However, with teenagers, a lot of what they are going through is this rebellious, sometimes not knowing how to express themselves kind of stage. And what music therapy is really good for here is that these teens can kind of talk through music instead of talking through themselves, which can be really helpful for teens who are kind of shut in, or it's hard for them to relate to peers or to their parents or to therapists and counselors. We can use the lyrics of songs that they enjoy, of songs that they identify with, to talk about what they're going through. And instead of the teen talking about, you know, I was embarrassed by what happened at school, or I made not the best choice, they can say, I identify with this song because this songwriter was embarrassed by what happened here or made the wrong choice. And through talking about the songwriter's perspective and the perspective of the lyrics, we can then access coping and processing that they would not have been able to more easily access because it's harder for them to open up about themselves. So if they open up about this other third party they relate to, then it's a more effective processing in that way.
Interesting. So like a totally, well, it's on topic, but you know, a thought that I've always had in my mind, you know, we obviously all have preferences for music. You know, what we like to listen to, what we don't like to listen to. And it's funny because my husband and I like a lot of similar music, but he also likes some of that older, really strong, heavy metal, hard rock music. For me, it automatically like affects my mood. It's really crazy. It comes on and I can go from being in a really good mood to a really awful mood. So often I wonder if that affects me in that sense, does it affect everyone in that sense? Or can some people actually be soothed by music that's loud? Like, how does that work?
So in general, the basis that we go off of is that for most interventions and for most goals, the most effective music will be the client's or the patient's preferred genre of music. And that goes for things like analyzing lyrics, using music to reduce pain or anxiety, using music to facilitate movement if somebody has had a brain injury. They will be motivated by and best enjoy the music that they prefer. However, there are instances where the client's preferred music, be it rock and roll or rap or good old country, you know, would not be the most appropriate. Say they're trying to decrease anxiety or improve relaxation responses. They're trying to learn how to let go of tension that they may be holding in their body. Rock music won't be good for that, whether it's their favorite or not. So in those kinds of instances, the board certified music therapist will choose the intervention or the music that will best help them, if that makes sense. And the effects that music has on different quality of life issues, like someone's mood, their overall quality of life, if they're in the hospital, something like that, usually it'll be their preferred music. And one of the great things about live music provided by a music therapist is that we can also adapt it. So we can adapt, you know, an AC/DC song to play it on one instrument with a voice and make it a relaxation intervention.
Awesome. So for parents that have children, male or female, even though we primarily focus on girls, and that child is locked in their room and they're constantly listening to a certain genre of music and parents are seeing a change in mood, is that something that they should be concerned about? Or is that, can that be an indicator of, you know, can music choice be an indicator of the child's mood? Can it be a red flag for parents if they see that their child is angry a lot of time and listening to that really angry, you know, music, or, you know, listening to the depressive songs and shut in their room? Can that be a flag for parents saying, hey, this might be a signal or a message that something's going on that you might need to look into?
So teenagers' music preferences vary a lot, first of all, and they also, there are so many topics within one genre of music that can be heard. So what I would tell parents is try to maybe listen to yourself, what they are listening to, the artists, the songs that they are listening to the most, and see just what they're about, what the messages are, what the topics are of those songs. A lot of the times, I know with me personally, listening to sad music can get me out of a bad mood. So we engage in our music listening preferences on a very in a very individualized way. And for some people, and in some cases, we might be using music as, you know, if I have a teenager in my therapy room with me, I might be using music and what's called the ISO principle. If they are agitated, anxious, and not feeling good, I might use what's called the ISO principle to play music that matches where they're at, so that matches their affect, that matches their energy level, and then gradually change it to bring them down, to calm the heart rate, to calm the mood, to improve the mood. But for other people, they might need to listen to an angry rock song in order to let it out. And that can be cathartic for them. And they, and once they are able to let that out and really feel it, then they're able to process that a little more and think more clearly about it. So it's a very, very individualized thing. You really have to know your teen and figure out what it is, what exactly it is they might be listening to, and go there as far as processing that with them.
Yeah, and maybe just asking them good questions. You know, I noticed that you're listening to this type of music a lot. You know, tell me about it. How does it make you feel? You know, why do you like it? You know, is it the lyrics? Is it the beat? And it's a great way to start opening up conversation and dialogue, especially if it's, you know, not the genre that you typically listen to. So let's talk about more about behavior and using music to change behavior. You know, music's always played a large role in my life. And I think it's coming from the Latin American background, the Latina background, the Spanish background. Music was always something that, you know, my mom used with my sister and I, whether it was, you know, trying to get us out of bed in the morning, you know, you would get one or two calls and then the music would be blasted, whatever it was, salsa, merengue, whatever would get us out of bed. And I've used it a lot with my girls as well. At an early age, we didn't have television in our home. We were a no TV family and I didn't like the quietness of the house. And I feel like a lot of people sometimes put the TV on in the background because they like that, you know, buzzing noise, that the house doesn't feel so lonely. So, you know, Pandora started to be really big 10 years ago. And so I started with Pandora and I always had music playing in the background and I would switch it up from jazz to, you know, classical guitar, a little bit of everything for the girls to listen to. And as they've gotten older, I've noticed that they will purposely search for the music. They like the buzzing of the music in the home and they'll match it to their mood. So let's talk about how you can use the music to kind of like help with moods and transitions.
Sure. So music, using music as interventions is a really cool thing because it can be used in so many ways. So as far as mood goes, if I'm working with an individual in a music therapy session, elevating mood can happen in many different ways, whether it's from talking about lyrics of songs and processing what's happening, or just using the ISO principle that I mentioned earlier to feel better. It can be used in many, many ways. As far as behavior goes and gearing it more towards in the home, music can do a number of things. You can use music as a structure. And so what that kind of means is using songs and lyrics or even different types of sounds to indicate what a child should be having going on right now. So this I kind of think of more with younger kids. But one of the examples that I think of is used with kiddos with autism a lot, and they are social stories. You put these to music and they become social songs. And these are used to give musical and lyrical cues. And songs are generally, it's easier for kids to remember songs if you put it to a rhythm and you put it to a melody. It just sticks in the brain better. And that I could go into how music is processed in the brain, and that's a whole other conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But because it sticks in the brain that way, you can use that social song to say, to talk about, you know, for example, with kids with autism, how to brush their teeth, how to get ready for school in the morning. And that can be transferred into use with kids who don't have autism, just to, you know, line up the schedule for the morning, or know what's going on today, or something like that. And parents can set that to a tune and replace, you know, certain parts with what's happening today instead of yesterday. And the kid can have that in their head, kind of, or, you know, if you write it down or something like that, and they have that, and they can know kind of what the parents have planned for that day.
Yeah, I love that. And that reminds me of being little and being in a preschool setting. And I remember hearing the teacher sing the cleanup song, right? So without her having, and she probably gave some type of warning, like, we've got 2 minutes left and then we're going to move on to something else. But you knew as a child when she started singing the cleanup song, yep, that everyone would start putting their toys together and everybody would know to do that. And she would keep singing the same song over and over again until everyone was cleaned up and sitting at the circle. And so it's so funny because I've never thought to incorporate that into my own home setting as that cue of, now we're getting ready to clean up, either to move to the transition to go to dinner or transition from dinner to bath. But using that, you know, the music helps keep the mood light without having to be like, it's time to do this. And the nagging, it brings the excitement in. I love that. And, you know, talking about how they learn and process, Aria, who's 3 and in Montessori school, knows the 7 continents. And it always shocked me because when Alexa learned it, she came home and just named off the continents, but I didn't know that they actually teach it through music. So when they're on the puzzle piece, they sing the song and they point to each of the continents while they're singing the song. So she knows all 7 of the continents through music. And that's pretty amazing with the power that has. So I think that's a great technique for parents to start. You know, if you have a child that has a hard time getting through their transitions of the day, or, you know, you have someone that's kind of slow in the morning, that maybe you can pick a fun song that they like. And it doesn't need to be a childhood song. It could be a current pop song, and, you know, it has 3 minutes. And you tell them, you know, when this song is over, the expectation is that you are dressed and ready to get into the car. And so if it's a song that they know, they're going to eventually learn, like, oh my gosh, I've got 30 seconds left. So I better rush. What
same way you can use that same music as a reinforcer as well. So using that music as a reward for getting up and doing what they need to be doing when it's preferred music. And if music works as a reinforcer for that child, it can be a really motivating one as well, to have creative time or time to sit and watch a YouTube video from your favorite musical artist or something like that, as far as getting into the home board.
Awesome. I love that. So how about, I'm going to start throwing some scenarios at you as the expert in music, and you're, and hopefully you can tell me how we could try to incorporate music to help and go through some everyday issues. So you have a lovely 2 to 3 year old who is, you know, getting to that point where it's just about to be lunchtime and they're hangry and they are also ready for a nap very soon, and you're kind of at your wit's end and they have the wet noodle meltdown, screaming and kicking at home or out somewhere. How can you use music to help? How can mom use that on the spot to help push her get through that moment?
Yeah, sure. So I would say, the immediate clinician in me wants to say, all right, sing something upbeat and mash them and very quickly, get them down. But when you're thinking about, you're in the middle of the grocery store having a meltdown, that's not necessarily going to work. So what you want to do is, and in my practice, I like to incorporate more than music. I like to use, humor and some different things as well, because if a child is so far gone in their upsetness, well, that's a word now. They're not going to necessarily register music because they're too loud to hear them. They're too loud themselves probably to hear it. And so what I would do in that case is probably use something with maybe a funny feeling touch, maybe like a poke in the belly or one of these with, grabbing on the shoulder or something like that. Not in a punishing way, but to take their mind off of they're screaming, really, to say, ooh, what was that? And then after that, or if you have little instruments and toys that your kid likes and that you use often and that they recognize, you can do that. And once they're focused in on that, you can then start singing a song that you all sing that you have established as okay, tune into mom now song, or as a we're going to calm down now song. Word of caution, I would hesitate or I would be careful about that instrument or toy becoming a reinforcer for bad behavior. So that's an interesting line to consider. You don't want to reward a screaming, crying child with an instrument and then they say, ooh, when I scream and cry, I get something fun.
Mm-hmm.
You want to avoid that. So if it's a kind of a tightrope that you have to walk, but it can work.
Awesome. I love that. So where is music therapy found these days? Where are practitioners like yourself working? Are you in the school environment? Are you in the hospital, private practice? Where does this come up?
Everywhere. So music therapists, they're found in schools, in hospitals, in community centers. They're found in older adult facilities, assisted living communities and skilled nursing facilities. And there are private practices. There are psychiatric practices that have music therapists on staff and, pediatric therapy practices that have music therapists on staff. And so really you're finding them in a lot of places, and we're growing too. We're constantly, with my practice, we are constantly recruiting new clients and networking into medical facilities and assisted living facilities and wherever we can get in order to spread the access to these services.
Awesome. And do music therapists collaborate with other modalities and methods? So I recently spoke with a woman that does art therapy. So very similar. But what I found interesting in art therapy is that they're actually able to interpret images through drawings, clinical interpretation, which I found to be fascinating. So would a music and art therapist work together in a practice setting as intervention?
Sure. Absolutely. We work with art therapists, physical therapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, nursing staff, and home health care providers. We function on a basis of collaborative care. And so absolutely music therapists are open to working not only in collaboration with other therapists from other fields, but also using principles from other fields in our sessions. So very, very often I go see a an inpatient psychiatric hospital. I do pediatric and adult groups there. And on a regular basis, I will use therapeutic artwork in conjunction with my music therapy interventions to enhance the effectiveness of my intervention in those settings.
Awesome. I love that. So how is music therapy different in school settings as opposed to, say, a regular music class? How would that be used? What would be the differentiation there?
So the biggest change that you see going from a music education classroom to a music therapy setting is that in a music education classroom, the goal is the music. The goal is to learn the notes and to learn how to read music and to learn how to play your instrument or properly sing in order to put on a cohesive performance and present that to your school and your family. In a music therapy room, your goals are not music related in any way. It's using music as the media to reach the goals on the child's IEP, their individualized education plan. And it's using those music interventions to, you know, enhance their speech and enhance how they can talk or enhance their vocabulary. Or if it's a child with a physical impairment to practice learning how to walk on their own, to write with a pencil. It's about the non-music related functioning and the skills that child needs to be as functioning as that child can be.
Awesome. I love that. So educational. So if someone's listening and they're thinking, wow, you know, I would love to find out more about music therapy or get my child into a program because maybe they, you know, are seeing similarities with some of the things that we've talked about, you know, their child is having some issues and they think this might be a good, you know, methodology to help them work through it. What's a good way for people to start researching this and finding out, you know, where they can find a music therapy? What's the accreditation? What is it they want to look for?
Yeah. So I'll begin with the website for the American Music Therapy Association, which is the professional association for music therapy. And that is musictherapy.org. And on that website, you can find information about what is music therapy. You can find fact sheets about music therapy with specific populations. And you can also find a searching tool that allows you to search your specific area, and it'll give you a list of all the board certified music therapists who are in your area, where they work, if it's a private practice or a hospital, so that parents can find the music therapist that they feel might be right for them. And what they want to look for, any music therapist that someone finds on that website will be properly board certified with the correct liability insurance and all of those things. But what they want to look for if they're looking at individual websites for private practices or hospitals is the credential MTBC, and that stands for Music Therapist Board Certified. What that means is that this individual has at least a bachelor's in music therapy, that they have completed a 1,200-hour full-time clinical internship and have completed the Certification Board for Music Therapists exam. After all three of those things are done, then a therapist is then a board-certified music therapist, and they can effectively practice music therapy.
Amazing. So there's a lot of education and research and clinical hours that go into this, which is really important. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. This was so enlightening, and I think it's such an incredible field that can have such amazing impact. I know the power of music for me has always been something profound. My mom used to always say to me, I could always tell when you're kind of in a funk or like sad or depressed when you were younger because you would stop singing in the car. And my girls have said it too. They'll say, you know, Mama, you haven't been singing this week in the car. We should listen to, usually it's Icona Pop's I Love It. You know, I don't know how I feel about, you know, crashing the car into the bridge and letting it burn, but my three-year-old belts out those lyrics so passionately that I'm like, we'll go with it. Such great stuff.
To find out more about music therapy, you can visit musictherapy.org. And to continue the conversation, please visit us at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com and become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.